A new collection of book reviews called Hatchet Jobs by critic Dale Peck has some of his colleagues talking about the death of civility in reviewing, while others are hailing Peck as the courageous voice of reason and truth. Book critic Maureen Corrigan throws in her two cents.
This year's Fiddling While Rome Burns Award for Most Entertaining but Insular Literary Controversy goes to the brouhaha over Dale Peck and his notoriously nasty book reviews. Given that you're listening to this book review, you may be one of the 20 or so Americans who know who Dale Peck is. I arrive at that guesstimate based on the recent NEA report that told us what we already know. The number of Americans who read literary fiction, plays, and poetry is drastically shrinking. For the unenlightened masses who don't know Dale Peck from Dale Earnhardt, he's a book reviewer who writes for the New Republic and other venues, and he's made a name for himself by, among other things, suggesting, in perhaps the greatest non sequitur in the history of the printed word, that the writing of novelist David Foster Wallace might be improved by having, how shall I put this, vigorous anal relations with another man. Peck is also known for making impossible-to-prove pronouncements in his reviews, the most famous being the opening line of his review of a memoir by Rick Moody. Rick Moody is the worst writer of his generation. You can read these shockers and more in the just-published collection of reprinted review essays by Peck called Hatchet Jobs. Since it's my turn to weigh in on Peck and his works, I'll officially declare myself on the fence. A position, by the way, that Peck, who embraces extremes, would surely disdain. Many of Peck's witchy observations throughout Hatchet Jobs made me laugh out loud, like I do when I read consistently more acute critics like James Wolcott and Christopher Hitchens. Peck undeniably has a voice, opinions, and a lot of energy. In a genre that's clogged with quote-larded book reports masking his book reviews, his caustic essays evince a Drano-like ability to cut through the sludge. Commenting, for instance, on the market-driven trend toward identity politics in literature that categorizes otherwise unrelated books under the labels black literature or gay literature, Peck says that such divisions have about as much validity as the chalk line Lucy used to draw down the center of the apartment she shared with Ricky, splitting couch, table, and coffee pot in half. But here's a problem. Peck often trains his big critical guns on puny targets. That quote I just read about the inanity of grouping books by the race or sexual orientation of their authors appears in a scathing roundup review of new novels by Terry McMillan, Sapphire, and Jamaica Kincaid. A negative review of those writers, with the possible exception of Kincaid, is what's known in the trade as a dog bites man story. When Peck does go after the big game, his firepower isn't nearly as dazzling as he tells us it is. Peck's big theory about the state of contemporary literature is that it all went wrong with James Joyce. From Joyce through Pynchon and DeLillo, he says, literature split into self-referential experimentation or dumbed-down realism. When Peck elaborates on his pet theory in the afterword to this collection, he tells us how daring he's being. Though I normally write in the morning, I am writing this in the middle of the night like a fugitive. My hands are literally shaking as I type. Sometimes even I am overwhelmed by the extent of the reevaluation I'm calling for, the sheer, expletive deleted, presumptuousness of it. But this kind of chest-thumping about the canon has been going on throughout the 20th century. In the 1930s and 40s, the renowned British critic F.R. Leavis dissed Jane Austen, Dickens, and virtually the entire comic tradition in English. And in the 1960s, American critic Dwight MacDonald identified this same split between high art and mass cult. The firing squad didn't come for Leavis or MacDonald at dawn to execute them for their radical views, and Peck needn't shake so much for simply joining their ranks. And for someone so allegedly radical, Peck is quite conservative in terms of the types of books he even chooses to notice. There's nary a kind word here about genre fiction or memoir or the embattled numbers of mid-list writers whose work has profoundly shaped the interior lives of the readers who love them. Lori Colwyn, Lori Moore, Scott Spencer, Christopher Tillman, these and other superb writers don't fall into Peck's polarized high art, low art categories. Here's a utopian thought. Maybe if Peck and the rest of the reviewing community, myself included, devoted more space to the wonderful writers out there who haven't gotten their due, rather than to the established big names or easy targets, the NEA might have less occasion to issue another gloom and doom report about the nation's lack of enthusiasm for reading.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. She reviewed Hatchet Jobs by Dale Peck. I'm Terry Gross. We just learned that the recording engineer David Baker died in his sleep last month of an apparent heart attack. He was 58. His career spanned 40 years recording a wide range of musicians, including Shirley Horn, Art Farmer, George Russell, Maceo Parker, John Zorn, and Sun Ra. In fact, he was one of the recording and mixing engineers for the first Fresh Air theme, which was composed and performed by pianist Jackie Byard. In 1998, David Baker won a Grammy for his work on Shirley Horn's CD, I Remember Miles, which he recorded and mixed. We'll close with a track from that recording.
Is your figure less than Greek? Is your mouth a little when you open it to speak? Are you smart? Are you smart? Funny Valentine.